So, Kate, you are this year's winner of the Susie Hamilton Legacy Award, which is given to a female-identifying environmental activist in the West Kootenays. What does being recognized for your work mean to you, getting that award?
It's a real honor to be recognized. I actually didn't even know I'd been nominated and found out at the time when I was contacted to find out that I was the recipient of the award. So there's some amazing female environmental, I'll say, advocates and also longtime community members that have been doing amazing work. So to stand with them and receive this award was a really special honor.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of people across the West Kootenays and British Columbia as a whole, not enough that are well enough known. So it's nice that we have an award like this out there to, you know, not just give you recognition, but let people know what you're doing.
Absolutely. And just to recognize every year the amazing people in the West Kootenays that are doing amazing work. While I totally appreciate it and am so honored, there's so many other people as well that it's just so great to have an award that recognizes these amazing people doing this sort of tireless work.
So you're the board chair and director of Farm, Orchard, and Apiary at Elk Group Conservation. What does that all entail?
What does that entail? Well, let's see. Actually, was the founder of Elk Group Conservation, so I started out as board chair with myself and four other directors, and since then we've gone from our initial board to now a board of seven, and I am involved in creating the vision behind Elk Root and have an amazing team that I stand with that help make that vision and our mission come to light and come together for the community. So it's a very exciting thing, and I spend my time between that vision piece and then actually having it come to life on the ground, on the farm, in the farm, orchard, and apiary through research, innovation, educational offerings, and then our most recent project, which will be the Regenerative Educational Community Food Garden. Focus will be on feeding vulnerable community members here.
How long ago did you start Elk Root?
Elk Root started 7 years ago and then officially was incorporated in, or sorry, 5 years ago and was officially incorporated in 2020.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's shocking to me just based on how much you have going on there. You guys seem to have accomplished so much in such little time there.
It's been an amazing effort on the part of a lot of people, and it's just been, I think what it is we just all are so passionate about what we're doing and see the benefits it's accomplishing in the community, and that is just so inspiring to see that our actions are having actual tangible impacts, which is really amazing. So yes, it's been a short period of time, but we have some very talented and amazing people that are working on our team, and everyone is hardworking, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears going into it, and a lot of volunteer hours, thousands of volunteer hours. So it's an amazing group of people, which I'm really so proud of them all.
No, it sounds like you should be. I mean, I've only done some online research, but from the pictures I see online and what I've read about it, it seems pretty incredible.
Well, you'll have to come out and see us sometime and see what all we're up to. We're kind of scrambling this week with greenhouses going up and a big workshop that's happening here this weekend for beekeepers and in the educational demonstration pollinator gardens, which actually focus on wild bees first. Our whole philosophy here is that you actually don't introduce honeybees, which aren't native, until you are making sure that the native bee population is taken care of. And our pollinator gardens are quite an inspiring place, and we even have apex pollinator predators in them, which means we're doing something right, which is great.
Yeah, that was one of the things that you were recognized for with the award, I think. And that was, is that the demonstration pollinator gardens? Could you explain those a little bit more?
Sure, absolutely. Gardens themselves are designed to have forage for pollinators from the snow leaving the ground all the way to the snow falling on the ground, so that there is forage and food and we jokingly call it a nutritional buffet for pollinators throughout the entire season, which is everything from horticultural plants that are non-invasive to local ecotype native plants. And our gardens have everything from designed in a way that they can deal with drought tolerance, and we use a lot of pathways in that to help provide nutrients and nitrogen for the plants in the form of clovers. All of that is contained garden, so we don't do any planting that isn't a local type, ecotype, native plant outside the gardens in any of the uncontrolled environments. Those areas are strictly for native plants. And then we also have over 175 local ecotype and native pollinator plants in our gardens as well, which is a whole other section of the demonstration gardens.
That's interesting because, I mean, you do hear about invasive species coming in and stuff, but I feel like you think about it more in terms of, or at least I do, in terms of animals. So bringing in one or two different plants could like really change a whole ecosystem.
It really can, and you know, it's a much larger conversation in the sense that what should be considered invasive, what isn't invasive, but the reality is the minute you introduce anything into a local ecosystem, you're having an impact on it, and so we definitely take the philosophy that, you know, leave it alone, basically, and let nature take its course. And then where there are areas where there's been human disturbance, for example, as I mentioned, we have, you know, everyone likes to have their backyard garden, and that's a different story. But if you are wanting to put something out on your roadside or those types of things, that is definitely an area where you want to be looking at using local ecotype native plants.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying there, you want to leave it alone, but then you answered my next question immediately because of human interference, that's why we have to go into nature a lot of times, is because of the mistakes we've already made.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And we don't want to make more by introducing something that shouldn't necessarily be there.
Right.
And we do have lots of options. The other thing with that as well is by propagating here, it means people can leave nature alone and they can come here to get plants that are actually local to this region. We haven't brought in a quote-unquote native plant from a nursery in Ontario, for example. We are actually there. The genetics are from here. They're adapted to here. And we can be propagating them, and you're not disturbing nature by doing that.
So going back to your work with bees, because that's one of the main things that you're recognized for with the Susie Hamilton Legacy Award, you're known for the creation of the sustainable apiary model. Can you explain what that is and how it works?
It's quite a novel approach in the sense that, and it, you would think it wouldn't be, but it's just in recent years that apiarists and beekeepers have been thinking about this, in the sense that when you introduce honeybees, which are not native to North America, you know, it's like bringing in a herd of cows, basically, right? And so everyone, you know, that is already living there, if it's deer or elk or whoever, suddenly you have this mass grazing mass that is taking over space and resources. And so for us, the sustainable apiary model is first and foremost about having your apiary so that you are planting appropriate forage for native pollinators, and then also supporting the honeybees, because otherwise they are going out into the wilds and taking forage away from native pollinators. So that's the sort of the first concept. And it also provides that, as I mentioned, nutritional buffet for the pollinators and then also for the honeybees. So that is the first stage, is actually making it so it's sustainable, so you're not degrading the environment where you have honeybees coming in. And then the other parts are a bunch of various equipment innovations, methodologies in best beekeeping management practices that we're developing. So it's that first and foremost, that forage piece. We don't feed any nutrition other than their honey back to them. We're actually officially certified organic as of July 31st. So we don't do any additives. It's all their own production, and we allow them then, we don't harvest on a schedule like most commercial apiaries. The only time we take honey off is if it's honey they don't need. And so therefore, we let them go through a full winter cycle eating their own honey, which is normally what happens in a commercial apiary, is they will take the honey off and then feed the bees sugar water to restock their honey reserves for the winter. But what we do is we let them have their honey. That, in conjunction with parasite management and pest management and better winter control. We have a bee barn. We also have outside hives that we've designed that have been adapted to the environment. And what it's done is just created an overall model of bee health. We also do swarm cycle queen rearing, which allows the bees to go through a natural cycle, raise new queens, and we will have actual colonies available for local beekeepers to purchase for fundraising purposes for us next spring with big, healthy, fat queens, which is fantastic. And overall, that whole system has just completely raised the health of our bees and created an incredible result in the sense that we're seeing bees actually doing some management of varroa mites, which is a big pest and problem. They spread a lot of disease through bee colonies. And so we're seeing them actually managing some of their mite loads. And we're also seeing the last 3 years in a row, we've had 100% overwinter survival of our bees, whereas the province and the country is seeing extreme losses.
Sounds like a 5-star resort for bees. I wish I lived that comfortably.
The bees are definitely treated like, I don't like to say pets, but to be honest, they're just part of the family around here, and they are treated very well. And the other neighbors, the wild pollinators, are we're just as excited having them here. And we've even seen western bumblebee, and a lot of the bees just now have started to live in the pollinator gardens because they don't need to go anywhere. So it's quite exciting to see. We have so many different varieties of bees and butterflies and moths, and it's quite something to behold.
Oh, it sounds like it. One thing else that I was very interested in when looking at what you guys do out there is that your work in education, doing things like teaching youth, having volunteer workers come in, internships. Can you speak about that a bit?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things we do for young children, and actually it's quite interesting because I think the adults and caregivers love it just as much as the kids as we do bee safaris, is what we call it. And we do a whole day, field day, where we have children and youth come out and they get to learn all about bees and actually see the hives and dress up in bee safety gear, so a suit or veils, and they learn all about the pollinators, and it's quite the event, which is really fun. And then we also have a youth internship program. We cater it very much to each individual, and we apply for that. It's usually in the spring to fall season, and we had 6 different interns this summer working either in the gardens or learning about not-for-profit administration and management. And then we actually have 4 more internships starting this fall as well. And 2 of our interns that loved it so much are going to be carrying on into the fall remotely while they're back at university. So it's a really great opportunity to learn about all of these things as a summer job because they are paid internships. So it provides some really great job opportunities and learning opportunities for youth. And they have some, you know, the one thing I really love about it is it just brings fresh perspectives and fresh ideas all the time. And some of the, as we all get older, we get less techie and less caught up with these things. And it's so great to constantly have this fresh mindset coming in and learning, but also being open to learning all the great things that our team has done and is doing, because they're all experts in their own right. But at the same time, our whole thing is that you never stop learning, and that's a big part of what we do, and also supporting at-risk community and vulnerable community members, as many of us that are part of the team are part of that community ourselves, and a very diverse community as well. So we like to support and make sure that nobody falls through the cracks.
Well, of course, for things to eventually get better, we're going to need, you know, serious government intervention and different policies. But I think it's groups like yours that really, really get it started. You're not going to spread across the whole world, or maybe you will in some ways, but you're going to teach people in these smaller communities what they need to do, why it's necessary, make it interesting for people.
That's absolutely it. Really, it's those grassroots organizations that are able to connect at the community level, and in some ways be able to act as an intermediary between government and the community.
Well, thank you for doing what you do in conservation. I'm confident that groups like Elk Root Conservation will provide a better future for our Earth by just helping educate the public.
Well, thank you so much for spending the time sharing that on the radio as well. Organizations like you as well that make a difference and get the word out there.